Jesus had just confronted the crowds with his grand call to discipleship and challenged them to count the cost. If you want to be a part of God's kingdom, if you want to live within the Father's household, if you want to share in the great inheritance of eternal life, count the cost. It's going to cost you everything. Struggle, he said, to squeeze through that narrow gate, because many will try and fail. Following this, we find Jesus again, as he was apt to do, partying. Partying and celebrating, we're told, in the houses of tax collectors and sinners, rebels of society, who were flocking to Jesus at this time, we're told. Jesus is in their houses eating and celebrating with these outcasts. Those like tax collectors were despised and hated by those of the Jewish society because they were traitors. They had sold their souls to work for the Roman Empire, to collect taxes on behalf of the big bad tyrants that ruled over Israel. Therefore, all the rulers and all the commoners of Israel hated the tax collectors almost more than anybody else. Traitors from their own people working to oppress their own people. And so the Pharisees and the scribes, the leaders of the society, see Jesus eating and partying with these tax collectors, these rebels, these sinners, these outcasts who were hated. And they challenge him, saying, "Look, what are you doing? Eating with the unclean, the outcast, these hated enemies of our people. You're colluding with them. How dare you?" Challenged by this, Jesus goes into three teaching stories. He says to these authorities, "Look, which among you, if you had 100 sheep and you were out in the fields, and you lost one of your precious sheep, wouldn't do the absurd thing of leaving the 99 in the wilderness, unprotected and unguarded, in order to find this one lost sheep? You would do this because your business, the economic gain of having all of your sheep in order, is too important for you. You would drop everything to make sure that you didn't lose a sheep for your business. And that you'd celebrate when you found this sheep. You would spend everything to find a lost sheep, wouldn't you? Or which of you, say you were a woman, and you had 10 days worth of pay, and you lost one of those days of pay, would you not drop everything to find this coin that was worth a whole day's pay? You would sweep the house up and down. You would drop everything to find this coin. You know how valuable money is to you. You would do everything to find your lost money, wouldn't you? And you'd celebrate. You'd even do the absurd thing of probably throwing a party when you found your money that would probably cost you more than the money you were looking for in the first place. That money is so valuable to you, you would drop everything to look for it, wouldn't you?" So let me tell you another story. There was a father. He had two sons. The younger son came to him and did the unthinkable, the greatest insult possible, and said, "Father, I am tired of living in your house. I want you dead. Give me the inheritance that is mine by right, as if you were dead today." This father, having the right, according to Israelite law, to actually stone his disobedient son to death, complies and says, "Okay, you want me dead? You don't want to be a part of my house? I'll split the wealth. Take it. take everything that's yours. So he divides the wealth for this younger son, gives him his huge inheritance, and sends him on his way. The son, thinking that he's finally found freedom, freedom from the tyranny of his dad's household, runs off. He's going to live life the way he wants to. He's finally in charge of himself, autonomy, self-rule, baby. He can live it up the way he wants. And he does. Partying, celebrating however he wants, he goes out and lavishly spends the entire inheritance that was his, of his father's. Slowly but surely that inheritance disappears. And as that inheritance disappears, we're told, a famine strikes the land. Famines had been huge in the early patriarchs. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had all experienced famines. And they were key moments of whether they would walk back to God or away. This son, in the face of famine and the loss of his inheritance, does he go back to his father's house? No. He finds a foreign citizen of that country and says, I'll do anything to work. And he finds himself in literally probably the most despised possible job, an Israelite feeding pigs, unclean animals that they weren't even allowed to eat or touch. And there he is, cleaning out their pits, feeding them food that he is beginning to be jealous for himself. I wish I could eat as well as these disgusting pigs. And there, literally at the bottom of his world, having lost all of the dignity, the respect, the honor, the wealth, the power that he once had in his moment of disobedience, we're told he wakes up. Comes to his senses. Nearly starving to death, working the most disgusting, dishonorable job possible, he realizes, in my father's house, everybody's taken care of. They may have to live under his rule, but man, do they have bread and bread to spare. Even the lowest in my father's house is taken care of almost like a king. And so he says, I need to go back. I made the gravest of mistakes. Maybe, just maybe, my father will be gracious enough to welcome me back as a servant, as the lowliest slave in his house. Because clearly, I told him to screw off and he's not going to want me back as a son. But maybe he'll take me back as a slave. And so he turns around and begins his journey back home. And as he's journeying back home, we're told that the father has been longing and watchful for the return of his son. And as he has probably been staring out down the roads into the village every day, this day, he sees coming around the bend his son. The one who told him that he wanted him dead. The one who took half of the family inheritance and just wasted it. Here he comes. And the father, immediately seeing the son, does the most shameful thing. A man of his culture, of his stature, the patriarch of the family, begins to run. Run to meet his son, probably eager to get to his son before the villagers get to his son. Knowing that this son had shamed not just the father of this village, but shamed the entire village. Everyone in their hometown would have been shamed, dishonored by this son's actions. They would have had the right to stone this son to death. So wanting to beat them to the punch, literally, the father runs to meet his son, to beat them, the villagers to the son so that he can rescue them. And he comes to his son and grabs him and hugs him and kisses him and says, "Son, you've returned. Finally. Welcome home." And the son, ready to go into his speech about, "Dad, I've sinned against God, against you. I'm not even really worthy to be your slave, but will you take me back as the lowliest in your house?" The father says, "No." Calls the servants, "Quick, kill the fatted calf that is reserved for kings and princes. Grab the best robe in the entire house. Get this boy sandals for his feet. Clean him up. Give him the great family ring that shows that he belongs as a son of this household. We are going to party tonight. My son was dead. He's alive. He was lost and he's found." And the party begins. Meanwhile, we're told the older son is out in the fields. The older son, coming in from another hard days of work for his dad, begins to hear this music and the revelry of the village and the great party that's going on. And he calls one of the servants and said, "Hey, what's going on?" The servant says, "Your brother is back. He's alive and well. And your dad is throwing the greatest party ever for the return of your brother." The older son, furious, angry. "Are you kidding me? He's throwing a party for that scoundrel that took our family inheritance, ripped our wealth in half, and squandered it? And now he comes back here and dad's going to act like he's still a part of the family? And not only that, throw him a party? There's no way I'm going into that party. What a joke." The father, meanwhile, is inside partying with the village, the family. He catches wind that his older son is outside of the house, out in the fields. So the father goes back out of the village, shaming himself, leaving the party behind, all of his guests. He goes out there to talk to his son. His son confronts him. "Are you kidding me? I slave for you every day, breaking my back for you, never disobeying a word of your commands. And you never let me party with my friends. You're kidding me. And now this son wasted his life with prostitutes. He's going to come back and you're going to kill the fatted calf you never gave me." And the father says, "Son, you are always a part of my family. Because of that, everything that I have is yours as well. This party for your son, for your brother, is for all of us. Come join the party. He was dead. He's alive. We had lost him and thought he was gone forever, and he's been found." Lost and found. The authorities had been getting on Jesus' case for partying with these tax collectors, these traitors, prostitutes, and sinners, outcasts of their society. And Jesus challenges them, saying, "Look, you'll bend over backwards to protect your economic investments. You'll bend over backwards to save a sheep. You'll bend over backwards to find a coin in your house. Do you really think it's appropriate for me, for you to not bend over backwards for these tax collectors, these prostitutes, these sinners and outcasts of our world who have gone astray. If you'll spend all day seeking a stinking coin in your house, why would you not do everything to bring a lost brother or sister back into the family? Where are your priorities? Who are we in Jesus' story of the family? Maybe the younger son told our father that we don't want any place in his house. We're tired of his rules. We're tired of having to listen to everything he says, cramping our style. We said, Dad, just give me money and wealth. Give me what's owed to me, my fair share. I can run my life. We told God we don't want to be a part of his household anymore. We're better off making the decisions about how to live on our own. Or maybe the older son, the one who's still within the walls of the house, thinks he's obedient to his father, but as we see in the story, who's the one really left on the outside? It's the older son, out in the fields while everyone's partying on the inside. Maybe we think we are part of God's family, but in reality, because of our hard hearts, unmerciful, unloving, unforgiving spirits, we've actually alienated ourselves and our self-righteousness. If you're one of these two sons, notice the father, his pursuit, relentless love for both of these lost sons. And maybe we can learn from the Father how we should be. That's our goal in the story, is to become like the Father. The one who is passionately pursuing those who are lost. Pursuing those who have completely told God they want nothing to do with him and have left. And even pursuing those who think they're still part of God's family, but in reality have cut themselves off through their unmercifulness and their lack of compassion. The lost. They're so important to God. If you're lost, he's chasing you, begging you to come be a part of the household again. It's better in his house than out there. Have that same passion for the lost. Seek those on the inside who have lost themselves. Seek those on the outside who have lost themselves. We want God's family to be bigger. That's the way he wants it. Amen.